His disappearance during the month of Kartik, we will chant the devotional bhajan, Jai Radha Madhava. Of all the many wonderful houses of Srila Prabhupada dedicated to his teachings and to the service of Lord Krishna, Radha Gopinath is the best house to be in, especially on this day, because here we see a very outstanding example of Krishna consciousness in action, the teachings of Srila Prabhupada being practically applied, and thus it's very inspiring. So thank you, all of you. I'd like to introduce my god sister, Srimati Sumati Devi Dasi, and she was initiated in Boston, first and second initiation, all in one shot. Just like Srila Prabhupada, he also got first and second initiation, all in one shot, in 1971. And she has served him faithfully by distributing his books, by serving as a pujari, by doing college preaching, opening preaching centers, serving devotees, and in particular now, she is a primary caregiver to devotees in the devotee care department. And in particular, she is very expert in administering Krishna consciousness to devotees who are in their departing days. So thank you very much for being here. And also, I'd like to mention three other devotees who we've been traveling with. You welcomed them the other day, but they weren't here. And that is Rasa Devi Dasi, who is a disciple of Rameshwar, and she's here from Alachua. And Jyoti Krishna Devi Dasi, who's here from Baltimore. And Dominique, who is here from New York City on her first visit to India. So thank you all for being here. So we were asked to discuss and speak about the qualities of a devotee as related to Srila Prabhupada. And it was suggested that we read the verses from chapter 16 in Bhagavad Gita, where the divine and demoniac natures are discussed. And naturally, because we're relating to Srila Prabhupada, there are no demoniac natures, only divine. So in the first three verses, these divine natures are described. And in the interest of time, I'm just going to go right ahead and read the translation and kind of skip the Sanskrit and the word by word, if you don't mind. Is that right? So, in chapter 16, verses 1, 2, 3, the translation by its divine grace through the Prabhupada. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, fearlessness, purification of one's existence, cultivation of spiritual knowledge, charity, self-control, performance of sacrifice, study of the Vedas, austerity, simplicity, non-violence, truthfulness, freedom from anger, renunciation, tranquility, aversion to fault-finding, compassion for all living entities, freedom from covetousness, gentleness, modesty, steady determination, vigor, forgiveness, fortitude, cleanliness, and freedom from envy and from the passion of honor. These transcendental qualities, O son of Bharata, belong to godly men, endowed with divine nature.
Can you hear a lot better now? Were you able to hear? Everybody heard the okay. So there's a very lengthy purport. So not to jump over Srila Prabhupada's head, but actually to jump at his lotus feet and stand under them, we'll bypass the purport and instead we'll discuss the divine qualities, the godly qualities, as exhibited by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. And of course, there are the 26 qualities of a devotee that, I don't know if any of you have seen this small little yellow booklet, 26 qualities of a devotee, as emanated by Srila Prabhupada by my godbrother Ajita Das, who has recently, within the last couple of years, left his body. But he made this little beautiful, it's a very beautiful little booklet with the 26 qualities and then ascribed each one of them through a particular incident to Srila Prabhupada. I don't know if these little booklets are still available, but it's a very nice meditation to study these qualities as related to Srila Prabhupada. I had previously had been asked to speak in a similar topic, and at that time I had written some notes. And so I'm going to use some of these notes. I had made this little, it was a short, very short essay called The Glorious Qualities of Srila Prabhupada. And in addition to those being named, I was searching for other qualities. And the preface, before I was going into these different qualities, I prefaced it with it by introducing an example. And the example was that if you see Nityananda Prabhu enter into a bar, do not think he is going to drink. Have we all not heard this? You know. If you see Lord Nityananda go into a bar, you know, only a wicked mind would think, oh, look, just see, he's going to drink, you know. So we can understand Nityananda, being the emblem of compassion and mercy, is going to save these wicked souls. So it happens that if we observe a saintly Vaishnava in an unusual circumstance, we should refrain from criticism. And I will tell, therefore, one incident. In January of 1967, Srila Prabhupada arrived in San Francisco. And this has also historic implications because up until that time, he had been in the little storefront in New York City. So this was his first venture outside of New York City. And it was the first time he stepped foot on an airplane and flew, because as you very well know, he came from Calcutta to New York in a boat, not a cruise liner. It wasn't a holiday boat. It was a freighter, a small freighter at that. So historically speaking, coming from New York to San Francisco in January of 67, first time on an airplane and first time that he had really began actively spreading Krishna consciousness outside the New York metropolitan area. So, shortly after he arrived, due to our excitement and enthusiasm to assist in spreading the Maha Mantra, we had arranged a particular program with people that we had been associating with. These people were all members of the Hippie Sampradaya, and more than that, they were like musicians. And they had, all of them, achieved some success or some fame. So we had convinced these bands, these rock and roll bands, to do a, like you'd say, a charity concert. And the venue was, you could say, the ultimate den of fallen and conditioned souls. It was a, you know, in retrospect, really sordid atmosphere. But it was called the Avalon Ballroom. It sounds kind of nice, you know, Avalon Ballroom, but it was infamous because every single regulative principle was being broken in one way or another. It was like the full pendulum of Kali Yuga was just going back and forth with all these people just engaging in all kinds of unimaginable sinful activities. And the whole room was very dark. And the air was filled with all kinds of nasty aromas, from alcohol to reefer, hashish, marijuana, bad body odors, many varieties of hallucinatory substances, all kinds of perfumes, particularly this one called patchouli, which it was like the hippies loved this particular oil. It was an essential oil. So because of their lifestyle, they didn't always get to bathe regularly, so they would just put this patchouli on. So, you know, it's just a very heavy type of aroma. And there were these mind-altering sounds, and then there was a light show. And the light show was especially divined by one young man who was very famous for manipulating pulsing lights on and off, which heightened the all-pervading kind of psychedelic mood. And it kind of created a field of cosmic distortion. So you couldn't see any, you know, if you're trying to look at the person next to you, they were just getting distorted, their features looked grotesque, and nothing looked like it normally would look if you were in a normal state of consciousness or in a normal situation. And every dark corner, all the room was just filled with dark corners, and little shadowy figures were lurking here and there. And the sound was nothing short of tumultuous. And it's just like these bands were looked upon by people, the members of the bands, they were looked upon people like they were the gods of the time. You know, even though they were just so degraded in their behavior, the hippies and even normal people would look up to these musicians as being somebody really special. And and you could really say it was like total madness, and everybody was like surrendering to the illusory allurements. And this was the situation that we invited Srila Prabhupada into. You know, there were people just standing there like freaking out, their minds were freaking out because they took some kind of a drug. Some people were openly engaging in sexual activities. Some were just standing still with their mouth open, you know, their eyes open, staring like blank. You know, you couldn't register anything. Some people were just ripping off their clothes, and some were pushing and shoving like some, they were just, nobody was there in front of them, but they were like pushing and shoving imaginary demons away. And some people were on the floor just writhing around. So it was really a very raw, hellish environment. But these were the people we knew, and these were the people that held a lot of influence. So we had understood one message. We didn't know much of anything. That's an understatement. But we'd understood that if somebody famous does something, everyone else will follow. And of course, that's why this whole situation was going on, because these famous rock and roll people were doing all these crazy things and everybody else was following. So, of course, we had the idea, if we bring Swamiji here and we bring the Maha Mantra here, then maybe there's some hope. So into that grotesque situation walked the rising moon of Lord Chaitanya Sankirtan movement, Srila Prabhupada, Swamiji, as we called him in those days, with this scruffy band of followers. And many of us had been in this very establishment just a few days before as members of the whole scene. So it was, "Welcome, Swamiji, to the ultimate garden of desolation and despair in the name of enjoyment." It was absolutely surreal. And there was a stage, the light was on him, and he entered, stood there. So not much stop happening, actually, except that the band stopped playing to make way for the next act, which was Srila Prabhupada, Swamiji. And all the other activities were continuing. So he stood there silently on the stage, which was illuminated by this one spotlight for some moments. His hands were clasped in front. In spite of this artificial lighting, there was a one spotlight on him. In spite of that very intense spotlight, his presence was surrounded by a glowing aura that was distinctly different from the artificial illumination. In other words, his own presence outshone, was brighter than the artificial light that was shining on him. So he looked towards Allen Ginsberg, and Allen Ginsberg was a celebrated beatnik hippie poet. And he had, in the early days, assisted in various ways. He had been to India already, and he knew the Hare Krishna mantra, so in different ways he had assisted. So Srila Prabhupada, he looked to him, indicating that Mr. Ginsberg, he would call him Mr. Ginsberg, should speak first, because he knew these people, he kind of knew their mood. And I was looking on from a distance. I was in a balcony, and from that distance, looking at Srila Prabhupada in this light on that stage surrounded by all this bizarre activity, I was feeling like a helpless mother who was unable to protect her fragile son from this situation. So even though I had gone many times to this Avalon ballroom, I could never find my space in it, and I always left feeling alone and let down. So now it was supposed to be different. You know, there was something different to offer. But it appeared awkward, both from the givers, who was us, and to the receivers. So Mr. Ginsberg gave an introduction to the mantra, and then Srila Prabhupada spoke of the importance of the mantra. But he could sense the inability of the audience to properly focus and hear, so he was very brief and to the point. And he invited them to sample the transcendental chanting of the Maha Mantra. But he was very brave that night. I don't think any of you could really comprehend what a immensely degraded, tragic situation. And this was a huge place, and every inch of the place was filled with degraded activities. And the only beacon of hope and light was Srila Prabhupada on this little stage standing there. So he was very brave. He was pure. He was eloquent. He was elegant. Just pure elegance standing there in his beautiful robes. He was completely self-controlled in a situation where in later retrospect, after realizing it, we should have never actually brought him there. In fact, after the kirtan, we had a brief kirtan, and amazingly enough, during the kirtan, a large number, I can't say everyone because I can't account for everybody's activities, but a large number of people did join in the kirtan. So for a brief time, the darkness of that situation lifted, and the holy name was shining forth. But as we were leaving, he briefly turned, and he commented to Shyamasundar, "This is no place for a brahmachari." And then the next day, he called in Shyamasundar and Mukunda, and he said, "So, how much money came?" In other words, he didn't lose sight of why we had gone there in the first place, because we were trying to raise funds for our new center. And he didn't refer to the sordid atmosphere the previous night, revealing also his practical nature in connection with Krishna consciousness. So that was actually the first exposure San Francisco had to Srila Prabhupada, and that was the first kind of exposure he had to our hippie subculture. So then, when I was thinking about that evening, I was meditating then on different qualities of Srila Prabhupada that weren't necessarily mentioned in the ones that I just read, are in the 26 qualities. So one was that Srila Prabhupada was creative. He was an original creative thinker. And an example is this, is ISKCON, that its deployment of Krishna consciousness in the Western Hemisphere by creating ISKCON, creating a society where people could come together and learn about Krishna and study Krishna consciousness. Because heretofore there had been no such institution dedicated purely to the study of Vaishnavism and specifically to Krishna. He was intuitive. He could immediately sense something, often before it was revealed or known to others. And an example of this, a personal example, occurred in Surat. Many of you have probably seen the photos and the short film clips when we were in Surat. That was an amazing experience, where an entire town shut down and welcomed Srila Prabhupada and all of us. The streets were lined with flowers and decorated with rangoli. There was mango leaves overhead from one side of the street to the other. People would be hanging out their balconies, hanging out their windows, crowding the streets just to receive and honor the Harinam Sankirtan party. They would put garlands on us one after the other, and we'd have to take them off, otherwise we couldn't breathe. You know, they really were so magnanimous in receiving Lord Chaitanya's mercy. But during that time, I was confronted with a potentially life-changing situation that was not known to others or to Srila Prabhupada. And I was feeling somewhat adrift and distraught. So I came in and sat in on a large darshan, but I was sitting at the far end of the room, almost outside the doorway in a shadowy corner. And after everybody left, I was still sitting there. And Srila Prabhupada looked up. I was about to leave, and he looked up and he called me forward. He said, "Is there something?" he asked. And I blurted out my situation in 6 words. And he responded in 8 words. And he completely adjusted the distressed situation to perfection before it even became manifest. So this was an example of his intuition and his ability to address situations. Another quality is that Srila Prabhupada was genuine. In English we have a saying, the real McCoy. So the real McCoy means this is the real thing, the real deal. It's not artificial. And an example of this was in the early days in 67 in San Francisco. He was a guest on a radio show that featured live interviews. And after the interview, there would be a period when the audience would call in with questions. So we had lined up the devotees. We were sitting at home listening on our phones and we on the radios, and we had our phones ready. So the minute they said, "Okay, the callers can call in," we were like dialing in. So the first one to call in was Garg Muni, and he goes, "Swamiji, can you tell us what is the meaning of Krishna consciousness?" And questions like this. So after about the third one, the commentator, the interviewer, he said, "It seems like everybody calling in is one of your followers. Let us hear from somebody else." So this woman came on, and in a sarcastic way, she goes, "Swamiji, you came over on a ship with a free passage, right? So you are a freeloader." Now, freeloader is a rather rude expression. It's not a complimentary term. Srila Prabhupada answered simply in an affirmative voice, "Yes." But the masters, the radio show commentator, who was known to be, he also liked to give caustic behavior towards his guests. He liked to embarrass his guests. But somehow or other, Prabhupada charmed him, melted his heart. So when he caught the mood of that lady, he goes, "Well, that's enough of her," and he just cut her off. So, but still, Prabhupada was genuine, even though this woman's behavior was really not acceptable. He was straightforward and he was real with her. He was also very gallant. He saved Radha Vandaneeswara from imminent danger when a faulty pillar that had held the platform of Lord Jagannath, the Radha Vandaneeswara were low and Lord Jagannath were overhead, but the pillar was not actually nailed down to the platform. So it was loose, and when suddenly somehow it started to sway, which meant Lord Jagannath would probably fall off and crash on the deities, but none of us got that. We didn't notice that. And Srila Prabhupada only noticed it, and he just leaped up, you know, in an unimaginable way, holding on to that faulty pillar, just in one motion, with an outstretched hand, holding on to that pillar, and thereby saving Radha Vandaneeswara from imminent danger. And then on another occasion, in 71, during the first, it wasn't the first Rath Yatra, but it was the first one where the cart didn't fall apart, because the first one, the cart fell apart after a few hundred yards. And we had this time, it was quite a big one. Srila Prabhupada was a guest. He came to the Rath Yatra, and it was looking like rain. And we were just trying to hold off starting, because we knew if it started to pour, that would be the end of the show. But the police were pushing us to get going. So finally, just a little ray of hope, and Srila Prabhupada lifted his arms, he's like this, in front of the deities, and we thought he was going to make his obeisances and get on the cart. But he kept his arms up, and he began to dance. And practically speaking, on the first step, the sun fully came out. And now the sun, we were all bundled up, including Srila Prabhupada with a big woolen coat. So as soon as the sun came out, he was dancing. It was obviously too hot. So he took off his coat, but nobody could pick up. You know, everybody was in bliss. You know, they couldn't see what was going on. So I was standing by him, so I just put my arms out like that, and he put his coat on my arms. On another occasion, on many occasions, he displayed chivalrous behavior. You know, chivalrous behavior means that you do something very wonderful for someone. And he would always ask, "Is everything all right?" He always wanted to know how his disciples were doing. And he would ask about our children. You know, he would ask, "How is Miss Saraswati?" And he was concerned about the Gurukula children, that they were being well fed and getting sufficient rest. And he would ask about our health, both men and women. And when we began our preparation to go to London, at that time I was already pregnant, so he told Shamsundar, even though he was very anxious to get this mission going in London, he said, "Wait until Malati delivers her child and rest some before going." He was very affectionate. Our lives were flooded with his affection. In one letter, he wrote, "As you are remembering me, I am remembering you." He wrote this to Janaki. It was a letter to Janaki and others, because we were feeling his loss in San Francisco. So, "As you're remembering me, I am remembering you." And in a letter to Jamuna, he wrote by his hand, it was a type letter, but down at the bottom he wrote, "And how is Janaki?" Janaki and Jamuna were sisters. "And how is Janaki, my naughty daughter?" "He loved us as no one else loved us, not even our parents. And in turn, we loved and trusted him completely." Srila Prabhupada was spontaneous. Once the horn on the car went out. The car was being driven by a devotee, and they were outside of Calcutta. And so you know what it is in India. If you don't have a horn, better you lose the engine than the horn. So he picked up a metal tully and a stick, and he had Garga Muni hold it outside the window, beating on it. And in the early days in New York City, he was dressing his own very beautiful small Radha Govinda brass murtis. And he saw that Radharani's skirt was not full enough. So he asked for a small twig, a little piece of from a tree, a twig to be brought in. And he artfully placed that twig underneath Radharani's skirt, allowing it to spread out. And then he commented that Radharani's skirt should always be full, as if she is dancing. He was also authoritative. One time in Paris, is anybody in here French? So that's good. Now, French people can be really, they have an attitude, you know. It's like they think themselves quite, of course, a lot of people, you know, particular countries, you always think your country's the best. But the French people have this, like, particular attitude, you know, about other, you know, people from other countries. And they also have this, because in the past they were dominated by these kings and queens who were not just our honorable rulers, they have an attitude about any type of person appearing to be in any type of position larger than their own. So it might, you know, in retrospect, it probably wasn't so, you know, on our part, so sensitive to bring these large Vyasa signs everywhere. But nonetheless, in those days, we had these gigantic Vyasa signs, and wherever we'd bring Srila Prabhupada for a program, the gigantic Vyasa sign would go along. So he was in this very large hall and had this gigantic Vyasa sign. And some of the audience, they began heckling. Heckling means, you know, taunting, kind of in an insulting way. And Prabhupada asked, he couldn't understand. It was a little hard to at first understand what they were complaining about. So one of the devotees explained, they don't like it that you're sitting on a big chair, on a big seat. And so Srila Prabhupada said, oh, that is all right, I can sit anywhere. You become God-realized, and then you can sit on the Vyasa sign. He said this to the people. You become God-realized, and then you also can sit on Vyasa sign. That kind of shocked them. You know, they were quiet after that. So that was authoritative, but in a positive way. He was also very regal. Again in Paris, he was scheduled to meet a very politically important person. And it was a very highbrow, formal location. And the aides and the forerunners of this important person, they were also present, just like Srila Prabhupada came with all of us, his entourage. That important person has his entourage. So when it came time for the politician to enter, we're all sitting, the members of his camp stood up and they requested Srila Prabhupada that he should also stand up. But he very quietly didn't say a word, but firmly he refused to stand up for the audience of a materialistic personality. And at the same time, although it was a somewhat awkward moment in the minds of those people, he was completely courteous to the man. So the person himself was very charmed by Srila Prabhupada. But Srila Prabhupada was not going to compromise his sentiments of love for Krishna by placing a worldly man in a role that, like when the curtains open, we stand and honor Krishna. And so this was very regal the way he did it. Although he refused to stand up, he was so courteous that the man was overlooked at. He was also unflappable. To use a phrase from the 1960s, nothing blew his mind. We used to say that if something really bizarre happened, oh, that blew my mind, you know, like if something, or something happened that just couldn't, you know, you couldn't understand, you'd use that phrase. So, after all, he was in constant association with Yogeshwar, the master of all mystics. And Yogeshwar, Krishna, he could lift a gigantic mountain with the little finger of his left hand when he was only 7 years old. So there was not much we could do generally that would surprise Srila Prabhupada. But occasionally, sometimes we'd manage to do something. And usually we could tell he was surprised because his eyes would become really large. Even if he wasn't saying anything, you would see these, we called it saucer eyes, like saucers. They would be like almost two times their normal size. So such a moment occurred during the first initiation ceremony in San Francisco, which was only the third initiation overall. So 80%, 90%, Shri Radha Gopinath Ki Jai. 90% of the people in the room had never seen an initiation, including those of us who were getting initiated. And just a few people that had come from New York had seen one or been in one. So we didn't have a lot of information about what was going to happen or how it was going to happen. And we hadn't been instructed, because even those who had been in the initiation were so, as we say, neophyte, they were so new they really didn't know much. So the temple was full of very curious onlookers. It was filled with all the aromas coming from the fire and the incense and the people. And we had a small kitchen in the back where we were cooking, and, you know, the chilies and the cumin were filling the air with their aromas. The Maha Mantra was being chanted very enthusiastically, and but not in a very coordinated style. So it was kind of like the Maha Mantra on a crooked road. And there was noise from the street when the buses or cars passed by. And then there was the effects of the yajna itself. So the room was just like filled with smoke. And we kind of cracked the door to allow some of the smoke, so it was like going out into the sidewalk. And we had just gotten our neck beads on. We'd gotten our new names, which we couldn't even understand. And, you know, we're looking through the fire, and we see that Swamiji, there's five of us, and we see he's saying something. We're trying to understand what he's saying. It sounds like bodo, 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 you know. So we're looking at each other, trying to figure out what it is he's saying. And none of the advanced devotees, you know, came forward to help us out of our ignorance. So we turned to our newly initiated temple president, who 5 minutes ago had been Harvey Cohen, and now he was Hari Das. And he went from the sitting position like this, and he got on his hands and knees, and we did the same thing. We got on our hands and knees. He bowed, you know, kind of leaned forward. We did the same thing. And he started very strongly blowing on the fire. So we also did the same thing. And then we looked through the smoke, and we saw that Srila Prabhupada's eyes were really large. So he stopped blowing on the fire. And he picked up his kartals, and he began chanting Hare Krishna. So we knew we hadn't done the right thing, but only later did we understand he was trying to tell us to bow down. So you can understand the fools and rascals that we were. We didn't even know how to pay our obeisances to our spiritual master. And we're so covered, he couldn't even, like, get the point across to us. So also under this heading, which I said it was unflappable, he didn't freak out, he didn't get upset, he just started chanting. But also you could see an example of his causeless mercy. That, you know, can you imagine today such a thing happening? Somebody would flip out, I'm sure. But Srila Prabhupada was intent on one thing, that was delivering the fallen souls. And when he saw at least a little attempt was coming from us, he was reciprocating greatly. So another aspect was Srila Prabhupada was mystical. And this is a side of Srila Prabhupada that, of course, it was mystical how he could take hippies and make them into happies. I mean, that was mystical. But there was also sometimes some incidents Many devotees can report of dreams of Srila Prabhupada, and it began very early for myself. I was totally unexpected. So I had a dream of Srila Prabhupada, and this was while he was still present, and in the dream I saw this area where in San Francisco it's surrounded on one side by water, and then there's a big bay. In this big bay, when the tide goes out, there's these mud flats, and then there's little channels, little rivulets of water. But it's a very dangerous place because most of that mud is quick mud. If you step into it, it'll pull you down, sink you in. So in my dream, the tide had gone out. I was standing on the shore, and I was contemplating how to get across to the other side. And then a little boat came up through one of the remaining water channels, and in it was Srila Prabhupada. He was the only passenger. And he glided up, and he stopped, and he said, "Get in, I will take you across." So without any consideration for the possible deadly consequences, I immediately stepped into the boat. And then Shamsundar had, my husband, he had a similar dream. So we all knew that Srila Prabhupada didn't know how to drive, because I had the service of driving him around in the early days in San Francisco. So one day I asked him, "Well, Swamiji, do you know how to drive?" And he said, "No." He said, "But I had a car." And from this, not knowing the culture of India and not knowing about that you all had drivers to drive your cars, he told me he had a car. So I was thinking, okay, well, he didn't need a driver, you know, because we still weren't clear on what it meant to be a Swami. So we had in our minds that a Swami meant you had a lot of mystical power. And so, therefore, we concluded, yeah, there was no need for him to have a driver. He could manage. But so in the dream, you know, to Shamsundar, Shamsundar was driving, and suddenly Prabhupada told him that he wanted to drive. And Shamsundar, even though he knew Prabhupada didn't know how to drive, he immediately got out of the car. So, and Srila Prabhupada got behind the wheel. So we told these little dreams to Srila Prabhupada, and we asked him about these dreams, and Prabhupada confirmed, he said, "Yes, the spiritual master can appear in a dreams and instruct the disciple. And he seemed pleased by our dreams because they both indicated faith and surrender." And he quoted a verse from the Srimad Bhagavatam that we hadn't read before. He said, "We think we have met your grace by the will of providence, so that we may accept you as captain of the ship that will carry us over the ocean of material existence." So that was very wonderful. Now, on the counter side of the dreaming, there was another devotee who had a dream, and in his dream, Srila Prabhupada told him that he could take LSD. So he told that dream to Srila Prabhupada, and Srila Prabhupada said, "That was not me. That was Maya dressed like me." So, but very mystical. So then, on another occasion, in a little, it was some little village, and I don't remember, a lot of the times we didn't know where we were. We were just following Swamiji. We'd get on a boat, a train, and get off where we were told. We, you know, really didn't always know where we were going. But this was a little village, and there was a program, and it couldn't really be classified as a Pandal program, which we had experienced Pandal programs like Cross Madan, very big, pompous programs. And this one was a makeshift little rickety stage, very small, a sound system, some temporary outdoor lighting, and a few chairs, which under the situation was kind of unusual. And then there were some duris, which were some thick those cotton carpets that you sit on. And the stage was just like a little platform. It was only enough to accommodate Srila Prabhupada. So generally at these kind of programs, he liked to be surrounded by his devotees, but in this case, we were part of the audience. And we began as usual with the kirtan, and then there was a break before the lecture. And during this lull, some kind of commotion was created, a distraction. It was like off to the side, but it created a distraction. And I was looking towards Srila Prabhupada, so I couldn't see what was happening, but all of a sudden the lights failed. It just became totally pitch dark, except for Srila Prabhupada, who was simply glowing with effulgence. Even though everything was, you couldn't see the person next to you, Srila Prabhupada was like shining and completely visible, and he was sitting very erect in like a yogic type of pose. And for some reason, I felt a little fearful or a little like maybe I had to protect him or something. And I started to rise up from my seat. But I hadn't even fully stood up. And I was just like getting up, and he just indicated that I should sit down. So I sat down, and I became very like a statue waiting to see what would happen. And somehow or other, he became even brighter. So now it became really quiet, but totally dark. Prabhupada was shining like anything, and it became really quiet. And then all of a sudden, the lights came on. And Prabhupada began to speak as if nothing at all had happened. So the only thing I could deduce from this situation was that these people, they weren't very educated. They were kind of simple people. It was the only way he could get their attention. Because normally he didn't exhibit, he had definitely mystic powers. There was other incidences, but normally he didn't exhibit them. And so by doing this, he caught their attention, and they were very quiet, ready to hear the words spoken from a pure devotee. And that night he actually lectured in Hindi for their benefit. And to use a phrase that we often would say, it was very far out to see that. So then one of the other mystic things that we noticed about Srila Prabhupada that you will often hear, he was floating, he was gliding. And really this was not a metaphor. In many cases it was really the fact. When I first saw him at the airport in 67, I noticed, I was trying to figure out if his feet on the ground or not. You know, he was just gliding by. So many stories from the airport, you will hear this. When we lived at John Lennon's estate, he would take a morning walk. And one morning, Jamuna went on that walk with him, along with others. And the grass was covered with morning dew, meaning with damp. And it looked very, it was all sparkling with that morning dew. And she noticed when the devotees were walking in the grass, you see the footprints in the moisture. And then she realized Prabhupada was also walking, but he left no footprint. You know, and she was really, really observed that. He left no footprint, although very clearly we were leaving footprints. And then I had a similar experience in Vishakhapatnam on a morning walk with Srila Prabhupada by the ocean. That the ocean, you know, it comes in, it goes out. So the ground is damp when it goes out. But if you step there, a little water will fill into the footprint. Just the other day, I took a walk on Chowpatty Beach. Same thing happened. Where I put my foot, the water would fill the impression. So we're walking behind Srila Prabhupada, and I suddenly realize that we're all leaving a footprint filling with water, but where Srila Prabhupada is walking, there's no footprint. And I became like, this is really exciting. So I wanted to tell somebody. I wanted to say something, but I had to be a little quiet. We're on the walk. I remember Brahmananda was there, so I kind of like pulled him on, even though he's sannyasi, I pulled him on his sleeve and said, look. You know, I didn't say it. I'm just pointing. And he looked. He also saw it. So he, one by one, we were all observing this phenomena, how he was just, we're all on this walk, but he wasn't leaving a footprint. So that was very mystical. And then on another occasion, it was either in Camden Hall or Camden Town Hall or Conway Hall, but I believe it was Camden Hall because there was like a big pipe organ there. And we'd had this kirtan, and Mukunda had gone up and played the pipe organ. And somehow or other, the people were responding very well. And they were chanting. Suddenly, Srila Prabhupada rose up, and there's actually a picture of this, you'll see him with his arms up and his kind of robes are flowing. He began dancing. And then we're looking and we're seeing his feet weren't on the stage. So you can imagine, we became even more excited. But the audience also picked up on this, and just with great fervor, everybody was up and dancing. And then, as it would be, he would end the kirtan very quickly, you know, Jai Om Shri Vishnupada, you know, as if nothing extraordinary had happened. But it was simply extraordinary because it was seen, it was witnessed, you know, it wasn't just one person mentaling out. Everybody saw that his feet were not on the stage, but he was dancing. So those were some of the wonderful kind of mystical ability, mystical revelations, you can say, but they were never aimed at drawing attention to him. They were always part of his loving devotion to Krishna and were making us more endeared to Srila Prabhupada and more eager to serve Lord Krishna. One other quality was aristocratic. So an example of this was when we were in Jaipur, there was a pandal program. And two notable things happened at this pandal program. One is Radha Govinda, who are now installed in New York, made their appearance. And Tamal Krishna became Tamal Krishna Goswami. But to inaugurate the program, there was a big parade through the streets of Jaipur. And the two devotees who organized this whole scene were Kausalya and Srimati Devi Dasi, two of his lady disciples. And they wanted to arrange a very nice horse-drawn chariot. We saw a lot of nice white horses. They wanted to have a... Well, first they wanted an elephant. They couldn't get an elephant because it was wedding season and all the elephants were booked up. So then they tried to get a horse-drawn chariot. Same thing. Due to the weddings, all the horses, you know, because the guys come in on the white horse, so all the horses were booked up. In the end, we got a bullock cart. And... the bull, the poor guy that was pulling the cart, he had one broken horn. It was like yesterday, we were at the Goshala out by the farm, and beautiful, beautiful bullocks and beautiful, beautiful oxen there with very strong, beautiful horns. Well, this poor guy was missing one horn. But nonetheless, even though it was not exactly that we'd envisioned, it wasn't an elephant, it wasn't a horse-drawn chariot, it was a bullock cart, Srila Prabhupada, and he got up and sat down as if it was a gold-plated throne. And suddenly it looked just gorgeous. And I was thinking, I would like to ride on that cart. I don't know why I was thinking, I'd like to ride on this cart with Srila Prabhupada. And just then he turned around and he said, "Where is Saraswati?" That's my daughter. He said, "Bring her." And he had her put on the cart. So in that way I felt the same, just like when Maharaj Prabhu Peruda, he wanted to have the darshan, but instead they brought his son. He was satisfied like that, so I was feeling very satisfied. So he was very aristocratic. He accepted the situation in such a nice way. Another quality of Srila Prabhupada is that he was grateful. He was grateful to his disciples for whatever they little and big things they would do. He was grateful to anyone. You all know the story of the Bowery bum who brought the roll of toilet paper, and he says, now he has begun his devotional service. In 1968, one young devotee named Harsharani wrote a poem, and it was a poem for Srila Prabhupada, and we were thinking it was kind of childish. We're thinking like that at the time. I remember that. And one of the devotees, nonetheless, they took it and read it to Srila Prabhupada. And the last line in the poem says, "Always thinking of what he can do in service of his dear most friend Krishna, never wanting anything in return." Now that part was definitely not childish. Anyway, they read the poem to Srila Prabhupada, and he was very grateful. And he said, "This should be printed in Back to Godhead." And Back to Godhead, those days, it was just like this. Some pieces of paper, copied, with a staple. That was Back to Godhead magazine. So if you look in the archives, or if you have a Veda vase, you know, folio, you can find this poem there. It was very nice. It was printed in the very early Back to Godhead in 68. So, I'm taking up all the time, so I will finish quickly because I want you to hear from Srimati Devi. I think that one other quality that's not mentioned in the list of qualities is that Srila Prabhupada was unique. This was his signature, that he was and remains to this day unique. So how is that? Well, Srila Prabhupada was not an ordinary man. Now we know that as disciples we are not supposed to see the Guru as an ordinary person. But aside from that stipulation, this has been confirmed by his words and his actions. It has been confirmed by his followers and learned scholars, and as well as all respectable Gaudiya Vaishnavas. And we would do well to consider this point, because Srila Prabhupada accomplished what no other previous acharya in the line of disciplinary succession had done before. And that is that he took the words of Lord Chaitanya. Lord Chaitanya said that my name will be chanted in every town and village. And he took these words and he brought fruition. It meant he brought them to life. Previously, the Maha Mantra was known only within the boundaries of India. And Srila Prabhupada, by his service and surrender to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, by his loyalty to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, he took this mission into and made it a reality. And so today, the Maha Mantra is known all over the world. We can go anywhere and people will recognize if we're wearing our devotional clothes, tilak, nektis, etc. Oh, you are Hare Krishna. Oh, you are ISKCON. So Srila Prabhupada fulfilled the words of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And in order to do this, we can understand he was not an ordinary person. He was unique. He was Shaktivesh Avatar. This means that he was specifically empowered by the Supreme Lord to perform a particular activity on behalf of the Supreme Lord. So Lord Chaitanya, being non-different from the Lord, being the Lord himself, he wanted his name spread far and wide. Once somebody asked Srila Prabhupada, if Lord Chaitanya wanted this to happen, he's God, why didn't he do it himself? And Srila Prabhupada answered in a very shy way, he left something for me to do. But still, when he was praised, Srila Prabhupada would not accept any praise for himself. Rather, he would say, if I have done anything at all, it is that I have followed the instructions of my spiritual master, and I have not changed anything what he has taught me. So this is the lesson we should really take above all other lessons, to study Srila Prabhupada's books, to study his teachings, and learn how to apply them in our own lives and give them to others by not changing them. So I want to thank you for listening, and now ask Sumati to please speak to you about her wonderful realizations and experiences with Srila Prabhupada.
Thank you, Mamati. You're a hard act to follow. I was not so fortunate to have...
I didn't have much association with Srila Prabhupada, but Srila Prabhupada is the savior of the fallen souls that Lord Chaitanya and Krishna sent here. And I was certainly one of those fallen souls, one of those degraded beings that Malati was describing that would hang out in places like the Avalon Ballroom, though I was on the East Coast. But Srila Prabhupada has saved my life. And I first saw him in 1970, no, sorry, I first met his devotees in the summer of 1970, and I had already been chanting the Maha Mantra. I had heard it on the radio one day and just loved it, and it became my favorite song, and for 2 years I sang Hare Krishna before I didn't even know it was a name for God. I didn't know it had anything to do with God or religion. Or you all don't realize how fortunate you are to have taken birth in this, the land of Krishna, India. Because when we grew up, we never heard of Krishna. We didn't know anything. So Prabhupada had to teach us everything. But anyway, I finally met the devotees in the summer of 1970, and moved into a small center in Washington, D.C. And there were no other women at that center, so they sent me to Boston. And then Prabhupada came a few months later to install the deities, Shishivada Gopi Balaba, and there were many of us who got initiated at that time. So, I was getting second initiation at the same time as first, so that I could be Radha Gopi Balaba's pujari. So there were very few Brahmins at that time, and hardly any in Boston. So I didn't really know anything about Gayatri Mantra, or I had never noticed anybody saying it, like sitting with their, either with their Brahmin thread or the ladies just moving their fingers. So I was sent into the temple room for Srila Prabhupada to give me this mantra. And he was sitting in a chair, and I was sitting at his lotus feet. And Prabhupada smiled at me, and then he went like this. I had no idea what he was doing or why he did that or what it meant. So I just looked at him, and he went like this again. And I thought, oh, he must want something from me, so I handed him my beads. And he just said, no, no. So then he took my hand in his hand and took my thumb and put it in the 10 digits and then had me repeat the mantra after him. It said that I should chant the mantra on each of these places on my finger. But I later read or heard that when someone is going to be serving the deity and they're not really pure enough to do that, that the guru will touch that person to make them pure enough to serve the Lord in his deity form. So I'm sure that's why that happened. That particular visit in the summer of 1971, the initiation, and like that was the most amount of time that I spent with Prabhupada or in his direct association. So after he arrived in the airport, of course that was the first time I saw him. He was the last person to get off the plane, and like Malati has described, I mean Prabhupada was effulgent. It was like when he stepped from the door of the airplane, it was like suddenly the sun was rising from the sky. He just stepped out, and although he was short in stature, he appeared so large and regal and beautiful and effulgent. And you just knew that this was not in any way an ordinary person. And then he seemed to just float across the tamarack and into the little building where we were waiting for him and having kirtan. And the Boston Temple at that time was an old house with the press. The first BBT press was there in the Boston Temple. So there were like 75 devotees, and we had to just have makeshift rooms with cloths hanging from the ceilings to divide rooms into one room into four rooms. And so we didn't feel like it was a really nice place for Prabhupada to stay. So Satsrupa, who was a grihasta at the time, had rented the nicest hotel suite down the street from the temple. When Prabhupada first arrived, we brought him back to the temple. It happened to be a Sunday, and he gave the Sunday feast lecture. And I remember him, and then right at the end of the lecture, Satsrupa said, okay, Prabhupada, we will take you to your hotel now. And Prabhupada looked at him and said, hotel? He said, the brothel is in the mode of ignorance. The city with its hotels are in the mode of passion. The country is in the mode of goodness. But the temple this temple is in Vaikuntha. I'm going to stay in Vaikuntha. I will stay here in the temple. So we did have a room prepared for him, and really we just thought that he would sit there to take rest during the day in between initiations and lectures and people visiting him, but we quickly made it into a bedroom for him to sleep. And then the next day, we took him back to the airport because he was flying down to New York for more initiations there. And that was the time when I really experienced Srila Prabhupada, not his feet not touching the ground. He was, it appeared that he was just slowly drifting down the corridor of the airport, but not in any hurry, just very slowly. But we were like running to keep up with him, like literally out of breath, because we had to run so fast. And then it just appeared like he was barely moving. During that same visit, at the end of a little hallway down from the room where Prabhupada stayed, were the bathrooms. The men's bathroom was on one side of the hallway and the ladies' on the other. And there were some hooks hanging on the wall. And devotees would hang their bead bags on the hooks if they were going in to the bathroom. Well, someone had hung just some beads there, not in a bead bag. And when Prabhupada came out of the bathroom, he said, "Whose beads are these?" He said, "These beads are crying." He said, "Your beads should always be protected. They should always be around your neck. They should be in a bead bag. They should never just be outside the storeroom like this." These, it was very personal. He was very upset to see this. And he really emphasized the importance of chanting Hare Krishna always. And again, always having the beads. And the next day, in the airport, we got to, there was no security places back then, so we all got to go with him right up to where he would go and board the plane. So he was sitting in a chair, and there was about 20 of us on the floor at his lotus feet. And he was just looking around. Everyone was chanting japa. And I was also chanting japa. And he looked right at me at one point, and he said, he called out, he said, "Your beads? You have your beads?" So I held them up. And he said, "Always have your beads." And so later that year, I was doing some book distribution at Northeastern University in Boston. And I was distributing Krishna books. And this one student was very, very attracted to the Krishna book. And so we sat down. I was showing him the pictures and telling him some stories. And then he told me, he said, "Well, I'm a communications major here, and I have a weekly hour-long radio show." He said, "I would really like it if we could present some of these stories on my radio show." So that was very exciting. And so Satsarupa started writing a script. And then this young man, he would make a tape with background noises that would go along with the story, if there was a storm in the story or the sound of whatever sound the demon was making, or door slamming, whatever, water running. And so in each episode, Satsarupa would play the part of Krishna, and I would play the part of Mother Jasoda. And Sahotra would play the part of whatever demon was in the story of the week. And then other devotees would come along too and the other parts. But and tapes were made of these dramatic readings. And sometime later, Prabhupada returned to New York City. So Satsarupa took some of these tapes down for Prabhupada to hear. And Prabhupada was listening to the tape of the story of Krishna subduing the Kaliya serpent. So the way the script was reading, when Mother Jasoda sees her beloved Lala in the grips of this horrible demoniac serpent, she, as Malati's been saying, freaks out. And she's just screaming Krishna's name. So that, you know, I was screaming Krishna's name. And so Srila Prabhupada at that point said to Satsarupa, stop the tape. And he said, who is that? And Satsarupa said, that was Sumati. And Prabhupada said, you tell her to always cry for Krishna like that. So that instruction was not just for me, but for all of us. And for all devotees who we have to learn to cry for Krishna from the bottom of our hearts. And the example is usually given like a child crying for its mother. But in this case, it was the mother crying for her child. So either way, the intense crying has to be there. And so maybe I'll just read the offering that I wrote to Srila Prabhupada for today. And see, it's already past time. Dear Srila Prabhupada, it is only by your causeless mercy that I am here today, and your disappearance day is no longer a sad day, for because of you, bhakti yoga continues to spread all over the world every day. I cannot believe my good fortune to have been blessed with your association in my life. I cannot thank you enough for saving my life, for teaching me what is the actual purpose of life, and how to live in such a way to fulfill that purpose. Those of us who grew up in the West before you came, we did not know of Krishna or Lord Chaitanya. We did not know how to cook and eat properly, how to dress nicely, or even how to clean properly. You patiently and lovingly taught us everything. Your life of devotional service was and still is the manifestation of the love in your heart for your Guru Maharaj and Lord Krishna. You loved Lord Krishna even as a young child, insisting on observing Lord Jagannath's Rath Yatra celebration, pulling your little cart through your Calcutta neighborhood, chanting and distributing prasadam. Krishna arranged all aspects of your life to prepare you for your mission of spreading the glories of the Lord all over this planet Earth. From your father, Gaurimohan Day, you learned devotion to the Lord and devotional arts such as playing the mridanga. You studied English in school, entered grihastha life, had dealings in the business and scientific communities, all preparing you to effectively preach to all classes of men, women, and children. Because of your purity, you were able to immediately understand that Bhakti Sananta Saraswati Thakur was a pure devotee of Radha and Krishna, and you took his teachings and instructions seriously. And because of that, we are all sitting here today. And all over the world, millions of devotees are gathered in ISKCON temples, preaching centers, and homes to honor you. For you have inspired us to live our lives for the pleasure of Krishna instead of pursuing our former selfish desires. I will never be able to repay my debt to you, but I earnestly pray that someday, in some lifetime, I may be able to please you with some meaningful service. Your insignificant servant, Sumati Dasi. Thank you all for allowing me to come and be here in this. This is such a beautiful, amazing temple that by Radhanath Swami's love for Srila Prabhupada, this amazing manifestation of his love and Prabhupada's love is here for all of us to gather and glorify the Lord, worship the Lord. And you all are so blessed to be here. And I'm blessed to be here in your association. Thank you.
So I will just conclude with one further small thought. One god sister who was a very dedicated book distributor and a dedicated reader of Srila Prabhupada's books. Prabhupada said, I have not written these books for others to read. I want my students to read them. So she did both. She distributed and she read. But she did not have much association with Prabhupada, and she was even doing these activities before she met him. So now he was arriving, and she naturally was very concerned and excited that now she would be able to meet her spiritual master in person. And she was thinking of all kinds of questions she could possibly ask him, but she actually couldn't think of any. So the whole visit was a brief visit, and the first day went by, and she was engaging in cleaning his rooms when he went out for a walk. So when he came back, she would be there, and the opportunity to say something was there, but she didn't say anything. Second day, same thing. Third day, he was leaving. And on the third day, other devotees came in, and she was personally introduced to him by the temple president. And he told that she's distributing your books, and Prabhupada responded in a very positive manner. And then he asked her, do you have any questions, the temple president, you know, to ask Prabhupada. So she blurted out, Srila Prabhupada, how can we get more of your association? And he looked at her and smiled, and he said, just read Krishna book. Even I read Krishna book. So we have told you these, you know, some little stories about Srila Prabhupada, not in the mood of entertainment or passing the time, but so that you can have some association with Srila Prabhupada. And Srila Prabhupada is telling you, if you want more association, how you can get it. Just read Krishna book. So on this day of his departure, it is, of course, an unavoidable day in anyone's life, but nonetheless a painful day in the life of the disciples. We gather together to remember him. And how best to remember him than through chanting of the holy name and performing devotional service, reading and distributing his books. These things would please him. They make our hearts happy, and they lift the burden of Kali Yuga from the world. he instructed one devotee who was engaged in pujari service but not feeling a connection immediately to the deities. He said, attachment, meaning in this case attachment to Krishna, comes through service. But I will expand that. Attachment to Krishna and Srila Prabhupada comes through service. Through service, we will realize the purports. We will understand the meaning of chanting Hare Krishna. But there's like a little circle there. In order for that to happen, we also must chant. The chanting on one side, the serving on the other. Prabhupada said these are like the two train tracks. And if one of the tracks falls off or doesn't function, then the train derails. So the chanting of Hare Krishna on one side, the performance of devotional service on the other. He said, in this way, you perfect your life. Next life, back to Godhead. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Thank you very much. So, were there any questions? Or we're a little over time. Yes?
Thank you, Mataji. You have given a very beautiful class on this occasion. So once I read a newspaper, Narad Muni asked Bhagavan Vishnu, tell me about your pure devotee. Then Prabhu, Bhagavan Vishnu has gone to America and Bow Street, and Prabhupada was dancing with a piece. And seeing that Narad Muni seeing this, but both are exchanging each other, that my pure devotee cannot be estimated. You follow the point or not?
It's hard for me to understand. So you were making a you were making a statement or asking a question? Or both? Comment. Okay.
Read a newspaper like cartoon or something where Lord Vishnu is asked by Narad Muni, who is a pure devotee. So Vishnu takes him to America, shows him Prabhupada dancing with the hippies.
Thank you very much. Nobody will disagree. And thank you very much for giving us this opportunity to speak about His divine grace. Hare Krishna.